Silence.
Oppenheimer.
I think they're talking about us. No way.
I myself am strange and unusual.
This is Nerd Play Radio.
Nerd alert!
These nerds are a threat to our way of life.
See, this is the stuff that brings nerds together.
So it's sort of social. Demented and sad, but social, right?
If I'm interested in it, then by definition, it is nerdy.
Are you in loser denial or something?
I'm a nerd, and I'm pretty proud of it.
My dad's a nerd.
And welcome to episode 77 of Nerd Pride Radio. 77, during World War II, in Sweden, on the border with Norway, the number 77 was used as a shibboleth, or password, because its pronunciation in Swedish is actually kind of tricky, and apparently it was really easy to tell when someone said 77 if the speaker was a native of Sweden, Norway, Germany, and that was their way of identifying people on the way through. Fascinating. So, ask me how I'm doing today. Go on, ask me. I am awesome! My name is Mike Jones. I am a D&D/Pathfinder nerd, a history nerd, a sci-fi nerd, a comic book nerd, computer nerd, movie nerd, comedy nerd, science nerd, gaming nerd, plus there's like seven other kinds of nerd. I only wish I was nerdy enough to be. You are listening to Nerd Pride Radio. This is the place I go every week to haver on about all the nerd stuff that just won't fit in my skull anymore. My co-hosts this week, I got two of them, Lamar Luttrell and Toshiro Takashi. Welcome, guys. But enough of all that. It's time for the meticulously plotted portion of this podcast. This is the time for me when I talk about whatever's been on my mind for the last week. If something strikes me as interesting during the course of my busy, busy week, I add it to my master list in my handy-dandy pocket mod, and the best stuff off that list gets spewed out all over you guys every week when I record. You lucky dogs. So, straight into the master list. That's Eli. Eli's very noisy. He wants pizza, but he's very noisy. This was really uncomfortable this week at work. One of my coworkers, she's one of those who draws on her eyebrows, right? And the other day, I couldn't take it anymore. I had to tell her, look, you're drawing on your eyebrows way too high, right? And I guess she took it well, but she looked surprised. If I had a rim shot here, that's where I'd play it. That's a joke I got from Jacob this week. I thought it was really funny. Okay. Anyway, straight into the master list. First thing, Mike was wrong. That's right. Yet another installment in our all too frequent segment, Mike was wrong. Turns out that last week, during the Podomatic, I had a two-part question from Ronster. I did part one, and then I got so wrapped up in part one, I never got to part two, and he has come by demanding that he wants his part two. Okay. Well, part one of his question was, what are the next three movies in my Netflix queue? And I answered that last week. And part two of his question is, can you recommend some movies to me? Can I recommend some movies? I love movies. I'm not going to recommend that one. I saw Horns last night. I guess I will recommend Horns. That was actually pretty good. Daniel Radcliffe, fantasy drama thing. He winds up with horns, and it's bizarre movie. Really bizarre movie, but it was a lot of fun. We really enjoyed watching it. And maybe a weird kind of ending, but ultimately a satisfying movie. I enjoyed it. But that's not what I'm recommending to you. No. I have got, depends on what you want to watch. All right. I got two types of movies. These are my go-tos. These are my standbys whenever I need to recommend movies to somebody. One, and these are ones that you may have already seen, but I love any movie that is a meta-commentary on a genre, and yet, while being a meta-commentary on the genre, is also a loving and faithful example of that genre. So, for example, Shakespeare in Love, one of my favorite movies of all time, and Shakespeare in Love is a send-up of Shakespeare's comedies, while also being a Shakespearean comedy in the same form that, you know, in a Shakespearean comedy, there's you know, slapstick, stupid comedy. There is, you know, women pretending to be men. There's mistaken identity. And in general, comedies get really, really messed up for Shakespeare until the very end when the Duke comes in and, or King or whoever, but usually a Duke comes in and just magically fixes everything for everybody. And Shakespeare in Love uses that exact formula. I mean, they've got the slapstick comedy and the mistaken identities and the woman posing as a man and the whole bit. I mean, the entire thing, all of it setting up him writing Romeo and Juliet and then performing Romeo and Juliet. And then, of course, everything is truly messed up. And in the end, you're going to need the Duke to come in and save everybody. And I thought it was a brilliant piece. Loved it. To go along with that, Galaxy Quest does the same thing for Star Trek movies. Soap Dish does the same thing for soap operas. If you haven't seen any of those three movies, go watch them. Those are good. But the ones I'm most excited about, because these are the ones that were less mainstream and more likely that you haven't seen them. So if you've not heard me talk about time travel movies, I love time travel movies. I even, to me, even a bad time travel movie is a great time, all right? You've seen Back to the Future. Everyone's seen Back to the Future. Back to the Future, not a great time travel movie, but an awesome movie. There's the story structure in Back to the Future is absolutely perfect, rock solid beginning to end. It a perfect story in three acts. And yeah, the time travel's wonky, but so what? You ignore it because the story is so good. Same thing with Looper. Time travel's a little wonky in Looper, but it's a great story, and I had a great time watching it. I love Looper. But again, those are mainstream movies. Those are the ones that you might have already seen. The time travel movies that you haven't seen, and these are the ones where, unlike those mainstream movies, these are movies that actually get time travel right. They have time travel that makes as much sense as time travel is going to make in a movie. Fairly dead on, in my opinion. I don't find flaws with the time travel in these movies. If in fact time travel exists in them, because for a couple of them, it's questionable. Even right up to the end, it's questionable as to whether or not the time travel is actually real. But it doesn't matter. If you've not seen Time Crimes, Time Crimes is a Spanish language movie. I think it's a Spanish movie. But it's a Spanish language movie. Time Crimes is beautiful. It is, and it is a movie that focuses specifically on the time travel itself. It's not about the characters. It's not about, you know, it's not about this plot development, character development stuff. No, it is a movie about the time travel itself, and it handles it really, really well. It's a great thriller mystery inside of this time travel dynamic, and it's spectacular.
How are you doing so far?
Well, I'm doing great, Noah. Noah, Ronster needs you to recommend a movie to him.
Say Big Hero 6 if you like movies that
get up to the microphone.
If you like movies that make you sad at first but then make you happy because of something the character that made you sad did.
Yeah.
Big Hero 6 is one of them. At one point Big Hero 6 sacrifices him.
Whoa, don't give it away. They haven't seen it. Don't tell them. But yes, he's absolutely right. Big Hero 6 was great. Oh, it'll make you cry. It'll make you laugh. It makes you laugh a lot. It is a great movie. Noah is dead on with that one. Back to my time travel movies. Time Crimes, Happy Accidents with Marissa Tomei and Vincent D'Onofrio. I went into Happy Accidents. I didn't even know it was a time travel movie when I went into it. I knew nothing about it. My wife had seen part of it and then realized that, oh my God, we have to watch this together. And she refused to let me know anything about the movie before we watched it. And it was amazing. Absolutely amazing. If you haven't seen Happy Accidents, go watch it. And also Safety Not Guaranteed. Safety Not Guaranteed has Aubrey Plaza in it, who I love in anything. And Safety Not Guaranteed is a great, great film. And it's only a couple years old. But these are great time travel movies that, in my opinion, do time travel correctly. And as an honorable mention, Primer, but I only am guessing that Primer does time travel correctly because the thing gets so convoluted that I keep meaning to go back and watch it with Aiden because he hasn't seen it yet. I haven't gotten around to it yet. But those would be the three. Do Time Crimes, Happy Accidents, and Safety Not Guaranteed. Those are my recommendations. So there, I've given you now, along with Noah's recommendation, I've mentioned at least 10 movies in this little segment that you really should watch if you haven't. Does that cover it? I hope so, because I feel so bad about leaving out your part two of your question last week. Are we good? Bros? All right, we're good. Having done with that, updates! dates. My voice isn't going that high. I don't know what's up. Talked about Charlie Hebdo last week. And first off, Mrs. Darks did comment on that, because I had characterized it as a political discussion. And she corrected me and said, yeah, you know, it's really more of a social commentary and not so much politics. And yeah, she's absolutely right about that. However, I do need to qualify that by saying that anytime I talk about free speech, I feel it's political because as an American citizen, I feel like my First Amendment and Fourth Amendment rights have been trampled on by every single administration since Nixon, and I only stop at Nixon because that's when I was born, okay? It is political in that sense, but she's right that really this was more about the people, the American people and society, than it was about government. But also, in my mind, let's not forget, for me, I have this thing, any topic I know, if I bring this topic up at Thanksgiving dinner, it's going to send my mother-in-law into a Glenn Beck quoting rant. Yeah, that's to me all lumped into politics and dear God, don't touch. But not accurate, but how I view it. Anyway, on to the update. update. Close enough. Just a side note, since the Charlie Hebdo affair, France has arrested upwards of 50 people for supporting terrorism. So much for free speech. They are arresting people for saying that they agree with the terrorists, or they agree that Charlie Hebdo had it coming, or for any public statement in France that indicates that you might have some sympathy for the people who shot up Charlie Hebdo, that constitutes supporting terrorism, and you are subject to be arrested and charged for supporting terrorism. And to me, it's sad because I don't think that's just France. I think there are a lot of U.S. citizens who support exactly this sort of mentality that yeah, oh, no, we're all for free speech. We're all for free speech around here. But for God's sake, you can't yell fire in a crowded theater. You can't do something that's going to put people in danger. So therefore, you can't speak your mind freely on a topic that may incite someone else to violence or may encourage violence. And the line gets really blurry that, yeah, okay, I agree that I shouldn't be allowed to bring up a call to arms and start riling people up to actually go out and riot and shoot somebody and commit murder or commit other crimes. I shouldn't be allowed to incite people to commit crimes, but there's a fine line between saying, I don't agree with what's going on, and I have sympathy for people who are trying to strike out against that. A fine line between that and where do you draw the line on inciting people to violence? And so there are a lot of people in this country, not just in France, a lot of people in this country who support silencing people whose speech they feel is dangerous, which is exactly the reason we have a First Amendment, is so that you can't do that. And so, anyway, that was my update that, yeah, while it's all well and good that we all stand up for Charlie Hebdo, it's all well and good that we stand up for a leftist magazine that's striking out at religious extremists, we also need to be able to stand up for religious extremists. We need to be able to stand up for everyone's right to free speech, and we don't. And so there, that's my update. I'm done. I'm not even going to use the silly voice on it. You know what this podcast needs? Roku! Yeah, to get off of the heavy topic there, go watch My Drunk Kitchen. Go to YouTube, on your Roku box if you can. That's where I watched it. Go to YouTube and look up My Drunk Kitchen with Hannah Hart. Hardo is the name she uses. And start with episode 1 entitled Butter Your Shit! It's awesome. It really. Hannah Hart is a small video series of Hannah drunk showing you how to cook while drunk to make snacks while drunk. And she is charming and adorable. This thing is incredibly well edited. It's just cute and funny, and it makes you wish you could be 23 again just so you could have a friend like that and go make drunk omelets together. It's fun. Go watch it. There. We've lightened it up. Whew. God, I thought it was going to drag us down again. All right. So what's up next? No, it's not my newest segment anymore. My second newest segment, Ramblin' Man.
When the Lord made me, He made a rambling man.
Yeah, you know, sometimes when I'm preparing stuff for the podcast, I practice. Usually while I'm driving, and I'll start reciting stuff, and I'll just tell a story or you know, rant on about a topic for a while and just see how it sounds. And it helps me kind of formulate my thoughts. But sometimes I can't quite nail down the topic. I mean, I know what I want to talk about, but it inspires so many other things. And if I'm in a mood, I'll find myself speaking out loud, and then a half hour down the road, I realize I've covered like four or five topics, and Ramblin' Man is me just trying to follow that chain backwards. Trying to make notes when I finally get where I'm going and see if I can remember to get it all done and bring it to you guys. So that's what this is. Did you guys hear that in the background? I think one of the kids was strangling one of the other ones. I'm afraid to go look. Maybe they're just killing the guinea pig, which, as I pointed out last time, would be fine. They're old, right? The guinea pigs. Anyway, so this Ramblin' Man came about because I got a Podomatic entry that I couldn't stop thinking about. And I had decided that rather than just wait for it to come up in the Podomatic, I couldn't stop my mind turning on it. And so I thought, all right, I'll just make it into a segment. And then another problem is I can't find it in the list. So eventually it's going to wind up getting rolled up, and that's fine. We'll deal with that when it comes. But someone was asking me about my Pathfinder character, and specifically about how I named her, because my Pathfinder character's name is Dothan, a female bard named Dothan. And the question said, so I'm taking it you named her after the town in Alabama, but why? All right, good question. I don't even, like I said, I can't find it in the list. I don't even know who it's from. It may have been Humongous. It may have been Ron. I don't know which one of you it was, so I apologize. But I appreciate the question because it inspired me. And so, okay, here's where it came from. Two reasons. First, recently in the Baby Name Wizard blog, which, as I've told you, I read at least 2-3 times a week. I check in to see if they've got new articles. I love the Baby Name Wizard blog at babynamewizard.com. You guys should go visit. And recently they had a blog post about female names in fantasy literature, fantasy and sci-fi, but it was fantasy literature is was the point of it. And in the article, they were talking about how, look, fantasy is covering, you know, far-flung worlds in space and across time and through, you know, historical eras and into complete fantasy worlds where there's no rules. There, you can make up whatever rules you want. And so therefore you would expect that with no restrictions, no rules, wouldn't you expect women's names in fantasy literature to reflect the strangeness of the realms that they're in, the alien nature of these places, and that they would have names that would not sound so traditional? And what they found out was, yeah, you know what? English-speaking writers who are writing fantasy and science fiction tend to stick to, even though they want a name that's not a real name, it still sounds very much like standard feminine names, and they all have this same ring of 40% of the names that they looked at in fantasy, female names in fantasy literature, 40% of them fully ended with the letter A. They ended with that sound, because that's a typical feminine ending in English. They had lots of soft letters S and SH and lots of L's, and they were all very lyrical and flowing and very what we would consider classically feminine names. And also with one cool addition is that the vowel combination AE showed up an awful lot, probably thanks to Tolkien and his use of that vowel combination for elf names. So I hadn't actually read that article at the time that I named Dothan, but those concepts that are in that article are what were in my head when I named her. Is I didn't want a traditionally feminine name. I didn't want something that sounded like a traditional female name, simply because Dothan, my concept for her is, yes, she's a teenage girl, she's a bard, beautiful voice, very talented and charming and personable, but she's also a half-orc, and she's also not traditionally a beautiful figure, and she's not, and so I wanted a name that was a little harsh. I wanted a name that wasn't traditional. And when it comes down to that, Dothan is a name that is actually, if you follow baby names, and I do, Dothan is actually a really good boy's name right now. It has that, that A-N ending that is unbelievably popular in boys' names now. A two-syllable name with the emphasis on the first syllable ends in A-N. Aiden, Nathan, Dothan, Dalton, they all fit right into this same pattern. And so it's actually a very masculine name in that sense, but it's also unusual, and because it's associated with a city in Alabama, not something you would think of as a baby name necessarily. It's just not that city names can't be used for babies. Austin, Dallas, I know. But this one's not in Texas, so it doesn't have the same ring. But I wanted a name that was clearly not a feminine name. Similar, Dwyn. Dwyn, who is in our group. Lucy plays Dwyn. I love the character of Dwyn, and I love the name. The name Dwyn does not, when you see that in isolation, does not ring any specific bells for what type of character this is supposed to be, but it suits her so perfectly. It's not a traditional name in any way, at least not that I know of, and yet it so suits this character, and it's a great name, a really well-chosen name in my opinion. But then the other reason that I specifically chose Dothan, I mean, I knew I wanted a different sound, an unusual name for a girl character in a fantasy setting, and I picked Dothan because the city of Dothan, Alabama. This is where I'm rambling now. Let me tell you a story. Back in 1994, my brother got married. And my brother got married in the city of Montgomery, Alabama. And we had all the family got together, and we had a wonderful time. It was a great wedding, a great reception. We had a great party, spectacular time. And then, when the wedding was all over, the next day, Kyle and his lovely wife depart for Miami or Orlando or wherever they were taking off from to go on their honeymoon cruise, and they disappeared. And then all the rest of the family on my side, on Kyle's side, all the rest of us all got together, and we carpooled from Montgomery, Alabama to Mexico Beach, Florida, which, as I've told you, is where my grandparents lived at the time, and we all carpooled down to Mexico Beach, Florida, because we were all going to spend a week on the beach and just enjoy the hell out of ourselves and have a little family reunion, and it was going to be a great time. So, on the way from Montgomery, Alabama to Mexico Beach, Florida, it is a 4-hour drive, and I know that because we drove it a zillion times when we lived in Montgomery back when I was a kid. And during that 4-hour drive, my grandmother and grandfather were in the lead car. And my grandmother wanted to stop to buy some shoes in Dothan. She wanted so badly, Jones, we need to stop. We need to stop and buy me some shoes. I need new shoes before we can go down to the beach. We need to buy, okay. And he wouldn't stop. Because, well, Jeannie, everyone else is counting on us. We've got to get down there and make sure we've got the houses opened up. They owned their own house, and then they had a little rental cottage on the beach. So we got to get down there, make sure we got the houses opened up, make sure we have everything laid out. We got to make sure we're prepared. We don't have time to stop in Dothan. We need to get down to the house. All right. So my grandmother was pissed off that she couldn't stop for shoes in Dothan. Now, the next part of the story is the rest of us did not leave as early as they did. The rest of us took a lot longer getting our stuff around. We took a lot longer getting packed up, getting out on the road. I don't know if we stopped for breakfast. I don't remember all the details. But what I do know is that we didn't have cell phones back then. Nobody was communicating on where everyone was at any particular moment. And so they wound up getting back to Mexico Beach. They got the houses opened up, and they sat there and waited for us. And it took us another 2.5-3 hours to get down there. Turns out she would have had plenty of time to stop in Dothan for shoes. Okay. Now, let's also note that this wedding and then the week on the beach, this was the last time that the entire family was going to get together as a group while my grandmother was A, still alive, and B, still lucid, okay? Because the next year or 2 years later when we went down to visit, she was already in a nursing home and she'd lost her mind to dementia and didn't recognize anyone she recognized Jacob because she thought it was me. So this was the last time we were going to see her lucid. And we were all together, and she was so pissed off that we didn't stop in Dothan for shoes. All right, well, she was so pissed off that she didn't get to stop in Dothan for shoes. And she was mad at us because we took so damn long. All right, she didn't get her damn shoes, and it's all our fault, and we didn't even show up on time. We didn't even have the common courtesy. So she went to her house, and she locked herself in, and she didn't see any of us all week long. Let that sink in, okay? We're all there. In her house, all right, we're in her rental cottage, and then we also had another one next door that we rented extra, but we're there in her house to spend a week on the beach with her. And she spends not just the first day, not a couple of days, the entire week. She decided, to hell with all of them, I am not going to go see them, screw that, blah, 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 nothing. All right? My dad went up after a while. And finally, I mean, he made the case and he pleaded and I'm sure he apologized for everybody, even though clearly nobody did anything wrong, but he still apologized anyway and tried to make the peace, and it was not going to happen. Not going to happen. She absolutely refused to come down. All right. And let me also make really clear, that yes, the dementia did take her mind after this and she went really downhill, and maybe some of that was playing into this at the time and we just didn't know it, maybe, but that's irrelevant, because she was a stubborn, obstinate, spoiled, unpleasant woman from day one and had nothing to do with the dementia. She had pulled crap like this her whole life. This is maybe one of the most extreme, but she was not a nice woman. I mean, she loved me because I was the baby and I was the favorite. Loved me to death. I was always her favorite, and that was awesome. Whereas Kyle was just an annoyance. Once she already had a good grandchild, she didn't need any more. Kyle was just a pain in the ass. She literally, we would all be posing for photographs. Every single photograph she took, they had a Polaroid for a long time. Every photograph they took, look at that. Kyle had to ruin another photo. Look at that. Kyle, look, why do you have to make a face like that? And Kyle, honestly, he's just a 7-year-old trying to smile. You remember the awkward smiling years? He's just trying to smile for the camera. God damn it, Kyle. Why you gotta ruin every photo we take? That's what she was like. And she honestly, we're all lined up for the picture. Kyle, you need to step back a little bit. No, move over. Just a little bit back, a little bit until he was out of frame. And then she'd snap the picture. Yeah, she was a mean, mean old woman. So anyway, that trip, we always, when someone is being really unreasonable, ever since then, if someone's being really unreasonable, someone's just, or really grumpy, or just being snappy about something, you just say, oh, I'm sorry, did we not stop for shoes in Dothan? Was that? Because it's funny. And we use that a lot. Shoes in Dothan is a go-to for what's up your butt. Dothan has a special place in my heart because of that story. And I've always liked that story. I mean, it was unpleasant at the time, but, you know, now, 20 years later, makes a great tale. And so therefore I named my Pathfinder character Dothan after that one. Okay. Now here's the thing. Already I've gone from Dothan to, you know, my Pathfinder character to the city to this long convoluted story about my grandmother being a horrible, horrible person about trying to buy shoes. And then I realized that whenever I tell this story, yes, I do an imitation of my grandparents and I'll put on the southern accent, the Florida accent, when I do their voices. But then I also, other points of that story, and I don't know if I did it this time because I was kind of watching for it, I'll just start slipping into that southern accent whenever I start telling that story, because it's just part of telling the story. And that fake southern accent that I slip into so easily, so does my brother. And this is where my mind starts wandering, and I remembered, oh yeah, you know what? When my brother worked as a telemarketer, he actually found out, and when he was a telemarketer, this was in college, he was a telemarketer, and he was only doing outgoing calls to, it was not really cold calls. He's calling people whose subscription to Time magazine has lapsed. That was the contract he worked on almost all the time. So you already had a subscription to Time magazine. You've let your subscription lapse. I'm calling you to remind you to renew it. And of course, by the time I call you, you've already ignored the renewal notices 3 times in the mail. So you really don't want to, but I'm going to offer you the reduced half price version. I'm going to offer you some bonus materials. I'm going to offer you whatever just to keep those sales numbers up. And he found out that if he used that same fake southern accent, that suddenly his sales went way up. And his theory was that because people generally associate that faint Southern accent, they associate that with A, friendly, and B, not that bright. So clearly, look, someone with that accent is not trying to take advantage of you. Come on, they're just down home friendly, right? Sure they are. Okay. And he actually said that helped him a lot. I tried the exact same thing at work. And I don't even remember why it was. I think I had just seen The Big Easy with Dennis Quaid. And I loved The Big Easy when I first saw it. And so I was using a Louisiana New Orleans Cajun accent while waiting tables in Perkins Restaurant in Lincoln, Nebraska. And I would do a Cajun accent, while waiting tables, and holy crap, did this work. Oh my God. The tips went way up. One of the gals that worked with us, because we're all college students. One of the gals that worked with us was from Louisiana, and she heard that I was doing the Cajun thing on the floor. She's like, no, seriously, really? You gotta do it for me. So I gave her a little taste of the Cajun that I was doing. She's like, wow, that's actually pretty good. I'm like, I know, it works. And it was stupid because here's the problem with doing that is I'm not going to do it forever. All right. It was funny and I got lots of questions about, oh, where are you from? And I had this whole long story about living with my grandparents when I was a kid down on the bayou and blah, blah, blah. And I can't even do the accent anymore. It's been so long. I've tried. In fact, in preparation for this podcast, I was going to practice my Cajun a little bit and see if I could put it on for you. I can't do it anymore. But I had this long story that would go with it. But here's the problem is I'm not going to do it forever. And when I put on that accent, I don't remember faces. I don't remember people. That you see so many people when you're a waiter that, you know, they're going to come back 3 weeks from now and suddenly I don't have an accent anymore, or I'm waiting on someone that I've waited on before and they know I didn't have an accent last time. What the hell? All right. So, there's a flaw in this plan right away. But what finally got me is that I was doing my Cajun thing, and I wasn't even really paying attention to it. It was just kind of second nature. I'm so waiting on this table, and I'm doing this accent, and this guy starts ordering, and I realize he's doing the exact same voice. I mean, dead on, it was exactly the same accent. And I'm like, oh crap. Either he's making fun of me, or he's really from Louisiana, and he's gonna know I'm a phony. Oh, this sucks. And of course, his girlfriend immediately recognizes my accent, says, oh my God, you're from Louisiana too, and blah, 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 blah. And she starts asking me all sorts of questions. I think she was on to me from the get-go because she would not let it go. Wanted to know where I was from, what part of Louisiana, where, blah, 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 blah. I mean, just wouldn't let it go. And the guy just wanted to just get his food and shut up and be done with it, but she would not stop pestering me on it. I'm sure she was on to me. And I should have just fessed up. I should have just said, yeah, you know what? I'm a fake. I'm sorry. Yeah, skip the tip. Seriously, don't even worry about it. I'm sorry for pulling this, but I couldn't let it go. I had to fake my way through it and try and duck out of there. I should have switched tables is what I should have done. I should have traded with somebody else, damn it. And then after that, I stopped doing it because I was like, all right, yeah, I got nailed. I'm done. I can't. But the other thing that if you're ever in this position, if you're waiting tables in some place that's not the South and you can do a really good Louisiana Cajun accent, as a dude, at least, let me tell you that women will throw phone numbers at you. I am not kidding with you. I am not like a spectacularly looking guy. I'm not even, you know, in my college days. I'm all right, I guess, but nothing fancy. I'm a big old nerd. I've always been a big old nerd. But apparently, even as a big old nerd, you put on the Cajun accent and boom, phone numbers like crazy. I mean, even times when I was like, I wasn't even paying attention. I'm just doing the accent because I'm just not, you know, because I've been doing the accent all night and it's like I'm not even into it anymore. And yet these women are trying to strike up conversations with me. And it's like, wow, really? If you are in that position and that's your thing, go for it. Try it. Or, you know, I'm guessing if you're gay, it works on dudes too. I have no idea. I'm just saying, because I don't want to exclude anybody. I don't know how it works for women to do the Louisiana Cajun, on men. I have no idea. I've never been in that situation, but I can tell you from this side of the table works really well, which as I'm telling this story to myself in the car, I'm reciting all this stuff. See how I'm rambling. It gets me thinking about Gambit. Of course I'm thinking about Gambit. And it makes me wonder why Gambit isn't more popular. because Gambit is just as a character. I mean, I know there's some people who like him, but he seems really widely hated as well. And, you know, you would think with that accent, I mean, of course, he's on a comic page, so it's not quite as real or effective, I guess. But I think what it comes down to is that Gambit, I think people don't like Gambit because he's just such a walking, talking stereotype. He's just that smooth Louisiana, New Orleans, Cajun drifter. He's that kind of con man, drifter, ladies man, Pepe Le Pew sort of smarmy biz. And I understand that in the comics, yeah, he had the romance with Rogue, and that things were, you know, it turns out that, oh, underneath it all, he's really got a heart, and he's, oh, but so what? He's still this sleazy stereotype, this, oh, criminal trying to make good and trying to, just blah. I mean, seriously, if they wanted a Cajun character, why make him so stereotypical? I mean, they even named him Remy, for God's sake. He had to be named Remy? Seriously? I mean, honestly, why not just take a black guy and make him Tyrone in the 70s? Seriously. Why Remy? It was so obvious. Why? I mean, if he's got to be a Cajun, why not a Cajun chemical engineer? They have some of those. I mean, with all the refineries and plants down there, there's got to be plenty of chemical engineers coming out of Louisiana working at the plants down there. Got to be, right? A Cajun school teacher. I'm sure they have tons of those. A Cajun nursing student. What's the... Why did they have to go with the stereotype? I don't get it. I mean, you know, with any luck, Channing Tatum is going to save this, and in 2016 we'll have our Gambit movie, and Channing Tatum can do no wrong, so therefore everybody will love Gambit after that. I mean, hell, they took, you know, virtually nobody in Iron Man and turned him into a powerhouse that rules the cinema. They could do the same thing for Gambit, right? I don't know. Like I said, I just wish they hadn't made him such a stereotype. Again, to bring it back full circle, it's about playing against type. It's you don't have to have, I started with Dothan and not being that stereotypical feminine name. Well, yeah, why not play against type? That's every character I do. One of my first thoughts is, I have a concept of a character in my head, and one of my first thoughts is, okay, well, I'm imagining this as a dwarf, but would it work just as well as an elf? Because I have this whole conception of this dwarf that does these things. I'm like, all right, well, but could I make it an elf? Could I make it female? Could I make it gay? Could I make it, I mean, you just go through all your different things. Or, you know, what if their background was from, you know, I'm thinking of this, you know, a poor criminal coming up doing whatever. Well, did they have to be poor? What if they came from a good family and yet they still got stuck in this life of crime? What if they had good parents at home and yet they still turned to this? What if, yeah, I don't know. It's about playing against type for me. That's where my rambling went, and then this is where it kind of trails off, so I'm going to have to stop it. Oh, my God! Wait. Before I'm done rambling, man, going back to the updates and the free speech stuff, and this ties into free speech rights, the net neutrality. Did you hear? I mean, I'm not getting my hopes up. I'm not getting my hopes up yet. But net neutrality looks like we're going to get what we wanted. Maybe. I mean, they got 3 weeks. They got 3 weeks to find a way to subvert this and stab us in the back and turn it all around. And I'm not holding my breath for anything yet. But this is the most positive sign I've seen yet, that the FCC is actually going to install net neutrality in a form that we actually want and make the internet a public utility and stop people from being able to partition it off and dole out bandwidth and charge premiums. And oh, it would be so nice. I hope 3 weeks. Let's just wait it out, see what happens. So anyway, enough of rambling. You know what it's time for?
Ooh, she blinded me with science.
She blinded me with science.
Blinded me with science.
That's right, it's my science corner. That music means if you don't walk away now, you might be in danger of learning something. The other thing I'm really excited about this week. Did you know that, you already know that Europa, one of the moons of Jupiter, is basically just a giant moon-spanning ocean with a crust of ice over the top? We're pretty sure that that's what it's like. All right, and that's pretty cool. But did you know that one of the moons of Saturn has an ocean under the surface? Enceladus? How did I miss this one? Oh, Enceladus has under its, I think, south pole, north pole? Well, anyway, under one of its poles, It has a massive ocean, an ocean that covers like 30% of the surface area of the planet, but it's down deep, but a bunch of liquid water under there, and like Europa, Enceladus is a place where life could be harbored. We've got liquid water, we've got, you know, faint, but some energy sources. It's a possibility for the basics of life to exist in these places, and unlike Mars, Europa and Enceladus are locations where you can look for life that you're pretty sure isn't connected to life on Earth. All right? Because like Mars, we have Martian rocks that have been found on Earth, stuff where there have been, you know, impacts on Mars that have kicked up enough debris into space that some of it has found its way to Earth. And so we're sure that vice versa, at some point, stuff has slammed into Earth in the past that has kicked up debris that has made it all the way to space and probably has wound up on Mars. And so therefore, if we find life on Mars at this point, especially if it's got any similarities to life on Earth, or if we find signs of ancient life on Mars, there is every possibility that the life on Earth and the life on Mars had the exact same origin, that it started either on Mars early on and then got kicked up and the basics got brought here to Earth, or vice versa. Is it likely? I don't know, but it's possible. So finding life on Mars, while spectacular, phenomenal, wouldn't necessarily mean that life arose independently in two different places. It would be likely, but it didn't mean that for sure. Whereas if we find signs of life on Europa or Enceladus now, then suddenly, you know what? That's almost certainly an independent origin of life, and that would be super cool too. So, and I bring this up because I was listening to The Infinite Monkey Cage, and you should also listen to The Infinite Monkey Cage because it's awesome that way. And on The Infinite Monkey Cage, they had two scientists who were both involved in different aspects of the space program, with Voyager, with Mars, with Enceladus, and just spectacular stuff. And as they were talking about it, they were having this debate about finding life on Mars and finding life on Enceladus. One of them was very excited about Enceladus. This is where I'm getting most of my information. And it was fascinating to listen to them talk and just fun. And so these two women are going back and forth. And as they're doing this, you can see that it kind of heats up because they're talking about where the next mission should go. And there's obviously limited funding and who should, you know, what should take priority over whatever else, because we only have so much money to spend. And as they're kind of bantering back and forth, one of the hosts says, wow, who knew that science or that space exploration was so pugilistic? And without missing a beat, one of the women just stops and goes, what's that word mean? And so he defined pugilistic for her, and then they moved on with conversation. And this has nothing to do with Enceladus. This has nothing to do with finding life anywhere else in the world or in the universe. What this has to do with, I wish I could be that person. I wish my mind worked in such a way that she encountered a bit of information that was relevant to what was going on with her at that moment, and she didn't know what it meant. She immediately asked for a definition. She immediately asked for clarification because she wanted to learn what that was. And there was no embarrassment, because me, you use a word in a context like that I don't know what that means. In general, I think I would bluff my way through it. I think I would try and place it in context, figure it out from the clues of the conversation, and I would move on and play around it and not worry about it that much. I would not, especially on a national radio show on BBC4, I can't imagine that I would stop that. I'm there as an expert, and that I'm going to stop conversation to admit that I don't know something and have somebody inform me and then move on, which is how the world should work. I mean, isn't that beautiful? Wouldn't that be great if every time someone didn't know something, they just simply said, I don't know? Like, how many times have you seen, you know, someone said, oh my God, did you hear about the what? And then they'll pretend that they've heard about it. Or, well, yeah, I heard a little bit, but okay, so what's, you know, or even sometimes, wow, did you see that on TV last night? and you didn't see it, but you know that this conversation will be over a lot faster if you just go, yeah, because whether you saw it or not is not relevant to the point they're making. They ask a question, and whether you say yes or no, they're still going to make the exact same explanation they were going to make before. But wouldn't it be nice if you didn't know something, you could just sit up and say, hey, I don't know what that means. So that would be so cool. So I've decided that this woman, and I don't even remember her name, I've decided she's my new hero, and I'm going to try and be more like that, to not be embarrassed when I don't know something. Because you know what? There's lots of stuff I don't know. I tell you guys all the time that there's lots of stuff I don't know. But when you're confronted in conversation, my gut reaction is to pretend I know everything. And that's bad. All right. But also, not just Enceladus, not just Europa, did you see the new pictures of Pluto? Did you? New Horizons. The New Horizons spacecraft is on its way to Pluto, and it just started sending us back, like 2 days ago, 3 days ago, started sending back pictures of Pluto, and right now, it's just a couple of dots. I mean, there's Pluto, and there's Charon, and they're just, you know, a few pixels across in this photo, and it's no big deal yet. But 3 months from now, in May, all right, New Horizons is going to be close enough to Pluto that it will be sending us back pictures of Pluto that are better than anything that's been shot from the Hubble, which means these will be the best pictures, the clearest, most detailed pictures of Pluto we have ever had, ever. And they'll be doing that in about 3 months, in May. So start looking for that, all right? And then, wait, that's not all. 2 months after that, in July, it'll be at Pluto. It'll be orbiting Pluto, and it'll be giving us shots of Pluto and Charon like you've never seen before. It'll be giving us close-ups of the surface of the most distant, well, used-to-be planet in the solar system. Because, okay, now, technically it's not a planet, it's a dwarf planet. Screw you, it's a planet. But it's also no longer the most distant because there's still Sedna out there, and there's KOR, and there's dozens of planets in our solar system, and they're all awesome. And we're going to be looking at a double planet system, Pluto and Charon, circling around each other, and we're going to get close-ups of them. And I don't know what we're going to learn, but it's going to be fantastic. It is going to rock my world. I am so looking forward to this, just to actually see photos of it. I mean, come on. We just saw photos when we landed on a comet. We saw photos of that. Did that not drive you nuts? That was awesome. Oh, space is so cool. So, New Horizons, you know I'm going to talk about it, unless, of course, I take the summer off, in which case I won't talk about it till September. I'm going to try not to do that. Not to talk about that. Sorry. New Horizons is going to be getting us awesome shots of Pluto coming up here, and I just can't wait to see more. This is going to be so cool. What's next? Oh, I know what's next. It's the word of the week. I mentioned it in the intro of the podcast. Shibboleth. Shibboleth. I've never heard this word before. And so I had to go look it up because they said that during World War II on the Swedish-Norwegian border, they were using the number 77 as a shibboleth or password because its pronunciation identified people. So I look up shibboleth. And shibboleth is any word or phrase whose correct pronunciation or correct usage makes it easy to tell if someone is part of the in-group or part of the out-group. So if you're part of this group, in this case, if you're Swedish, like you're supposed to be during World War II on this border crossing thing, if you're Swedish, then you will pronounce it correctly and they'll know it's you. But it's also, and I wish I had other examples of it, but basically it's any term, any word that, you know, if you're part of our group, if you're part of the people in the know, you're part of this little subculture, you'll know what the word's for and you'll know how to use it in context correctly. And if you try and use that word or say that word and you're not part of our group, you know, trust me, we'll know because you're going to sound like a dork. All right. And shibboleth, as a result of that original usage, in American English, at least, the word apparently is more common. I've never heard it before. In American English, the concept of a shibboleth spreads to basically any knowledge or cultural touchstone. It doesn't even have to be a specific usage or pronunciation. It's just, it's become any knowledge that sets this group apart. That if you have this knowledge, you know, this internal jargon or terminology, this knowledge, then we know you're part of this group. Okay, and it can be, you know,
like any of our 80s cultural references that mark us as children of the 80s, that although 80s culture and our love of nostalgia has gotten to the point where, God, even my kids recognize as internet nerds, even my kids recognize tons and tons of 80s references that they weren't alive for. They don't even understand all the context of it, but they do recognize those and understand why they're funny in context. Weird. But that's a shibboleth. A shibboleth is some piece of knowledge, some word phrase, some anything that tells you who's part of the group and who's not. There you go. So shibboleth. I've decided I don't like it. I don't like the concept of a shibboleth. Normally I would encourage you to use the word shibboleth in daily conversation, but I find shibboleth kind of unpleasant. I find it because really specifically it's used to set people apart. And it's used to tell who's in your exclusive club and who's not. And that, I don't know, makes me hinky. Sets me a little on edge. So I'm not encouraging you to use it, but now you know and your mind has been expanded. Unless you already knew what a shibboleth was, in which case I'm the idiot. That's fine too. I'm good with all of that. But hey, I'm done with the meticulously plotted portion of this podcast. So, where do I go next? Oh, I know. The Pod-O-Matic! Sweet, sassy, molassie, this is the Nerd Pride Radio Pod-O-Matic. At the end of every cast, I bring out R2 and his fully pimped out Pod-O-Matic bubble, and he rolls up random topics for me to talk about. And where do these topics come from, you ask? Well, that is where you come in. You want to hear me haver on about something? You send your question or topic to me by email, or better yet, in a private message on my forums. I will add it to my Pod-O-Matic list. Pod-O-Matic is about whatever you want it to be. You guys have been so good about sending in new ones. Ronster just sent me about 20 of them in the last few days. I got a bunch from Humongous. I got some from Mrs. Darks. Zimny. I think I'm apparently the last couple of times I've gotten Pod-O-Matic entries from Zimny, I've mentioned that I don't think he listens anymore because I haven't heard from him in so long. And he sent me a note that says, no, I'm still listening. I'm still here. Here's a whole bunch of new Pod-O-Matics. Go ahead. So apparently Zim's still around. Hey, Zim, I'm so glad to hear it. I really am. I missed you, man. This is cool. But anyway, thank you guys for sending in a bunch of new ones. The list is really building up. I encourage everybody else, those of you who've been sending them, keep sending them. I love them. Those of you who haven't ever sent me a Pod-O-Matic or who haven't sent one in a long time, come on, get in there, man. I want to hear from everybody. I love the diversity. I love the different points of view. You guys are funny. You guys are really good at this. Thought-provoking, funny. I want to hear from you. Send me stuff. Anyway, enough babbling. Havering. My number is 82. And 82 is... It's from Billy Bob. Hey, Billy Bob. Billy Bob says, whenever I make D&D characters, I didn't even know you played D&D, that's awesome, I always cheat a little bit. I do actually roll the dice and arrange them like I'm supposed to, but then I almost always bump the numbers up a notch. Bam! He writes bam. With an exclamation point. Back to his question. How often do you fudge the numbers as a player? How about as a DM? Okay, that is a great question. And as a dungeon master, well, I don't even roll. I make the character and I make it look like whatever I want it to look like. I fudge everything as a dungeon master because, yeah, you know what? I have a certain conception in my mind. I have no rules I need to follow. I just have to make a good story. And so therefore, I create whatever the hell I want as a dungeon master. That's my job. All right. But as a player, that's a little trickier. All right. If I'm being completely honest with myself, I would guess I cheat a little bit on almost every character I make. And this is speaking strictly as D&D Pathfinder. Because D&D and Pathfinder are one of the, they're in the very small subset of games where you don't have, you have leeway in your character. You have random roles that could be good, could be bad. So a starting character could have some real wide variation in it. And I mean, other games that I play usually have some kind of point buy system or some, you know, you're doling out your resources very carefully and therefore, supposedly in the name of game balance, all the characters are roughly equal. Whereas in Dungeons & Dragons and Pathfinder, not so much, dude.
Because you're counting on these 3d6 rolls, or in most cases, it's usually you're supposed to roll 4d6, take the best 3 dice, write that number down, and then when you've got 6 numbers, you now arrange them however you'd like to make the character that you want to make. And so there's a lot of variation in how those are done, and usually, I want to say I don't do it very often, but I think I do. I bump it up just a little bit, but I think I do it because everybody does. And this particular time, for Dothan, I actually did her as a Method 1 character. All right. I rolled her up using just straight 3d6 rolls. And I mean, I did 3d6, write that down for strength. 3d6, write that down for dexterity. There was no rearranging the dice. There was no best of 4. There was no nothing. I just wrote down the numbers I got and I went with it. And after the characters were all done, her charisma was, it had been a roll of 16, and I used her half-orc bonus to bump it up to 18. And that was my one concession, is I realized my numbers were so far below everyone else's that I bumped it from a 16 to an 18, so that with the bonus she had a 20. She was maxed out on charisma because it was her primary stat. But I mean, we're talking about a 7 on her wisdom, an 8 on her strength. I mean, these were some dismal stats otherwise. So, I don't feel bad about that at all. And as it turns out, having done that, she has, on her character, total bonuses. She's got total of +7 across her character. If you don't play Dungeons & Dragons or Pathfinder, that doesn't mean anything to you. But for those of you who understand it, she's got a total bonuses of +7, which is the lowest in our group. All right. I think there's another character with +7, but most of them are +9. +8, I think there's one that's +11 or +12. I mean, off the charts high. All right, and so I assume that most people, because I assume that most people in our group, I assume most people who play Dungeons & Dragons, they're going to bump their stats a little bit because, hey, I rolled up my numbers and, you know, it's just random dice. How's the dungeon master going to know that this one was really supposed to be an 11 and I wrote down a 14? How's he going to know? Look, it's one number. I marked it up. So what? I think most people do that because, I mean, look, I've done the probabilities for, you know, you roll 4d6, take the best 3, and then you come up with 6 stats. And I've come up with the numbers on that. And our standard character creation process that we're supposed to be using, I mean, it's just a standard process out of the book. You should be coming up with a grand total. You should have stats that are around +7 or +8 for the average character. All right. And yet, out of the, I don't know, we've had 12 or 14 characters in our group, I will lay you money. There's never been, even though +7, +8 is the average, I'll lay you money, there's never been anyone below +7. So either we are a phenomenally lucky group, or there's people out there who are at least as much of a cheater as I am. So, I mean, you just got, it's, I feel bad now. See what you did to me, Billy Bob? I feel a little guilty admitting it even. But, cause I remember there was one time for Kaz Monster. Oh, one of my favorite people. Kaz, do you still listen to the podcast? I hope you do. I hope you come around. I played in a game that Kaz ran, a steampunk pirate version of Dungeons and Dragons, and it was an awesome setup, and I loved my character, loved him so much. And I came in with my character, and he gave us the rules for how to create them. All right? He said, here's the rules for character creation, go. So I followed the rules exactly, and I came up with a character that I thought was pretty good. And my top stat wound up being a 16 was my highest stat, so I put it into whatever the highest, you know, whatever the most important stat was for this guy. I followed the rules exactly. I gave him the character, and after looking at it, he said, dude, seriously, bump a couple of those up a little bit. Otherwise, you're not going to be a match for anybody else here. Basically saying, yeah, I know I gave you the rules for character creation, but if you do that, you're going to be behind everybody else. So just go ahead and cheat. It's okay. I mean, it was so eye-opening for me because I was really, I mean, I know I'd always been a cheater as a kid. That's just, you know, par for the course. But here I was playing in one of the first grown-up games I had ever done as a player, and I was trying to follow the rules, because I was like, I want to be an honest player. And I was like, eh, dude, no, seriously. If you don't have a 20 in there somewhere, you're really going to be screwed. I'm like, oh, man, seriously? That is rough. So, you know, you're playing with a group of friends. You don't want to accuse anybody of fudging their numbers. But But somebody's got to be somewhere, so. Well, geez. All right. That's only one Potomatic down, but I don't know if you guys heard my wife calling, but apparently Aiden is finished with his speech meet. I'm going to have to go pick him up. And so we're going to go run out and get him and maybe grab something to eat. Who knows? But when I come back, we'll do some more Potomatics tonight. And this will give you guys an extra couple of hours to get some more stuff into the listener betrayal segment. And when I come back, maybe Aiden will join me for some more Potomatics. So I'll be back. And we're back! All right, anyway, I went and I got Aiden, and I came back, and guess what? Number 32. 32 is right there. It's from Zimny Pot. Hey, Zim. D&D is notorious for its alignment system. What other systems of morals exist in other RPGs, and what do you like or dislike about them? I don't know. Do any other systems have morals built into them?
Every other roleplay I've ever played uses the D&D alignment system, so.
Yeah, see, that's God, that thing's pretty ubiquitous. Let me, let's go to Google and see if Google can help us here. Let's see. RPG moral mechanics. Is that a good one? Let's try that search and see what happens. Because I can think of, I don't think mechanics that express character, personality, and morals. Okay, sure. Moral mechanics in RPGs. Give me just a second to read here. Well, how about that? There's a bunch of examples. In addition to Dungeons & Dragons with not just the alignment system, but the Paladin Code, it says Vampire and Sorcerer and other games in that group, you can lose your humanity, and humanity has an effect on how you're going to behave. I would presume I've never played those games. Let's see. Pendragon, I'm just reading off of a Google page here. Someone asked it in a forum. There's chivalry mechanics for some characters. Burning Wheel has beliefs that influence how you act and has mechanical effects whether you act for or against your own beliefs. I suppose Shadowrun has essence, which is when you lose essence, supposedly you lose some of your humanity, although in all my times of playing Shadowrun, I've never seen that actually affect someone's personality directly. There's no actual mechanic for it affecting your actual actions, personality, and that, although some people may choose to play it. I don't know. There's others. It lists Dogs in the Vineyard. Again, it's all games I've never played other than Shadowrun, and Shadowrun I've never seen it actually used in that sense. So, I don't know. I mean, there's lots of games out there. I have no problem with mechanics that work towards guiding personality, beliefs, alignment, morals. I think it's kind of cool. I love having bizarre restrictions like that. I've never actually done it. I like the idea of it. I like the concept. I should have said it that way. So I don't know. Maybe if someone else has some opinions on it, they'll throw it in for us. That would be cool. It's on the edge. Let's shake it. 84. All right.
Woo!
84, back to the spreadsheet, is from Daz. Hey, Daz. Daz says, oh, I forgot to number these. Crap. Daz says, what is the future of miniature figures? Plastic, lead, or 3D printed at home?
3D printed.
Well, yeah, 3D printed. Although, I really like plastic pre-painted figures, simply because I have a crap ton of them from Heroescape, and I love those, but the bases are a little bit big for my hex map. Personally, I just use printed cutouts that I use, just little stand-ups, and I really enjoy those, and we have a ton of them. We have hundreds in a bucket over here, and those are the ones we use most often, because if the guys need something in specific, I can print it out for them. I mean, I can give them exactly what they want. They find the picture they want online, boom, we can print out a figure, it's ready to go. So I just really like those. But I'm going to guess, yeah, 3D printing is going to be the future of that. Being able to go online and find exactly the figure you're looking for, someone else's sculpt, and then you print out exactly what you need, and you've got it done. Yeah, what's up?
There's also ways to print them in chocolate now, so make of that what you will.
Right, or pizza.
You can print pizza now?
Yeah, apparently you can print. If you load up, there's all sorts of 3D printers that you can load up with food ingredients. And depending on what food ingredients you load it with, you can print candies and chocolates. You can print pizza. And I don't know if any of this has to be in quotes when you say it. But yeah, you can print all sorts of stuff.
I've been putting up the quotes. I don't know about you.
No, my fingers are tired.
From what?
What do you mean from what? From all this Pot-O-Matic. 89 is Humongous. Hey, Humongous. Have you ever played Ogre, the Steve Jackson game? Yes. Yes, I have. I enjoy Steve Jackson games of all ilks and ilks? I don't even think that's right. Shut up.
Ilks?
Shut up. I meant elks. Okay. So anyway, elks, deer, any hoofed mammal, really. Anyway, Ogre, I didn't enjoy Ogre all that much. As much as I love Steve Jackson games, and, you know, I bought the thing for like $3 in a Ziploc bag game, back when it was just a tiny thing, that I bought at the local game store when I was in high school. And now I understand Ogre is much larger, and it's a tactical war game, if I remember correctly. And it was just never my bag. Tactical war games have never been high on my list. You know, I like Car Wars. I like some stuff. I enjoy playing Melee as a tactical war game, and Animal Ball Melee, available on my games page on my website at animalballmelee at nerdprideradio.com. Go to the free games page where all my games are free all the time. Anyway.
Just taper off there.
Yeah, well, because my ad, it wasn't going very well. I was hoping
to start plugging in your own stuff here.
Well, of course, but I was trying to do like I do in the credits, where it's all free all the time. And I've got the rhythm for the credits, but I can't quite get it here. 2/3 of a dozen others. But it really failed. So that was bad. So yeah, I played Ogre and just wasn't one of my favorites. I get it, but I don't know. Maybe now that I'm older, if I had tried it again, maybe I'd enjoy it, but I've just never gotten back to it. 38 from, missed it. There it is. 38 from Zimny again. Hey, Zim. Zim says, best name for a magic spell.
Bigsby's expressive middle finger.
Exactly. I was going to say any Bigby shirt. What are all of them? Bigby's interposing hand. Bigby's clenched fist, Bigby's, yeah, expressive middle finger.
Bigby's roommate, not a spell, but kind of a jerk.
Right. Which you actually just got a Bigby's hand t-shirt for Christmas.
Yes, I did.
It was awesome. And it's got all five of the hands on it. And Bigby, anyway, it was a Woot shirt, and it's really cool. Actually, I don't even think we got it from Woot. We got it from somewhere else. No, correction, it's not a Woot shirt. I don't remember where we got
T-Fury?
It.
T-Fury?
I don't think it was T-Fury either. We did get you a T-Fury shirt, but it wasn't from there. Anyway, it doesn't make any difference. Yeah, anything Bigby. I like those. I'm sure there are others that are really, really cool, but that's my favorite. 30 from, hey, it's my brother Kyle. I like Kyle. Kyle says, what's the last alcoholic drink that you had, and when's the last time you drank a beer?
I can't answer this one.
Can't. Or won't.
Little of both.
All right. The
Most
last
I don't remember.
Yeah, you're funny. The last alcoholic drink I had was a whiskey and coke. The whiskey was in fact Jim Beam, I'm pretty sure. And I had that at my sister-in-law's surprise party for her 40th birthday just a couple of weeks ago. And I had about 8 of them that night. But it was
what?
I did. They were good.
I didn't hear about this.
Yeah, well, that's why we had a hotel that was like 2 blocks from the bar, and we got done drinking, and not even 2 blocks, and we walked back to the hotel, and we passed out, and it was nice. It was a really good time.
the passing out was nice?
No, the having a hotel right there and no kids to bother me, that was nice.
We passed out, it was nice, so I was a little confused.
The whole night was very nice. We had a good time. The last time I drank a beer... That is tough. Probably 2 or 3 Kirins at the Alamo Draft House 3 years ago. I don't know. Or 4 years ago.
Was that with him?
Yeah, probably.
Giving inhale directions on the way home?
Yeah, I don't remember the whole... It's been a long time since I've had a beer. I finally got old enough to realize that I don't like beer and I don't want to drink beer. If I'm going to have a drink, which I do a couple times a year, if I'm going to have a drink, I'm going to have something I enjoy, and I don't enjoy beer. I like the Kirin. Kirin is, it's still beer and it's still not the best, but Kirin, because of the Tokyo airport, has some sentimental value for me, so I really enjoy that. And that's because of you, bro. So cool. But yeah, that's about it. I'm not a beer drinker, man. That's my favorite R2 noise. Number 70. 70 is for Mrs. Darks. All right, we're getting a variety today. Mrs. Darks says, would you rather be on stage in... Have I done this one? I'll let you answer this one in case I've done it already. Would you rather be on stage in a theatrical presentation, not karaoke, we know the answer to that one, or learn to be a techie? So in a stage production, would you rather be on stage or would you rather be behind the scenes?
I'd be behind the spotlight like I always am.
See, I knew that. Except for the upcoming play.
Where I play the Big Bad Wolf.
Where he's going to be, they're doing, we're hoping, Shrek the Musical. They haven't yet gotten a script because apparently it's expensive. But they're going to do Shrek the Musical, and he is going to play the Big Bad Wolf, which I believe means he gets to wear a wolf costume with a dress
not,
over.
Not just any wolf costume. The nightmarish bad memories of the Toto suit.
Right. No, tell him about Toto. That was awesome.
7th grade, what, like 5 years ago?
7th grade would be 4 years ago.
4.5, let's call it.
Well, then it was the all-school play in 7th grade, and now it's the all-school play in 11th grade.
You're
so 4 years.
You're right.
I don't mean to be a pedantic asshole, but... yeah.
Pedantic, but...
Anyway, go ahead.
But, when I walked into auditions, the director said it, Aiden, you're Toto! And I'm like, okay, and I left. Sure enough, I became Toto. Worst acting experience of my entire life.
And your first acting experience of your entire life.
No, I was a frog back in...
Oh, that's true. What was so bad about being Toto?
The black dog suit.
Uh-huh. Yeah, apparently, they made him Toto because his brother was an actor before him, and was an actor in that play, in fact. He was the Tin Man in that play. And Jacob has always been an actor and always been just out front, center stage, just eats it up, loves that stuff. And they just assumed that, well, Aiden's another Jones, so clearly he's going to be exactly the same as his brother. And thus, in 7th grade, they wanted to throw him into the acting early. She puts him into the dog suit and makes him Toto. And Aiden is not so much the center stage guy. He's a great actor, really good actor, really good ear for it, really good voice, but he's not as comfortable with the center stage. And so here he is in the dog suit, and he was sweating his ass off in this thing. So here's this poor kid, 13 years old, and he's just sweating and dying inside this dog suit, and he didn't know how to deal with it because, well, it was his first time acting, it was his first time on stage, and he didn't know what to do, but didn't realize that, God, he can go backstage and get out of the suit for a little bit if he needs to, or he could, do something. At least now with the Big Bad Wolf, at least he knows what to expect. It's going to be the same damn suit, but with a different head,
No. It's the same head.
You're going to wear the Toto head and still be the wolf.
No. See, because the gloves that I need are included on the suit. So I have to wear the dog suit with a dress over it.
Yeah, that's awesome. I am so happy about this.
Die.
No, because you're older and smarter now, and you'll better be able to handle the heat and discomfort because you'll know how to deal with it.
By panting?
So, yes, because that's what dogs do.
Thank you for getting the joke.
But he's only participating as an actor because it's the all-school play, which means it's just for fun and it's no pressure.
I'm being forced to.
And not because his parents are forcing him to, because we would never do that.
You do that.
But in general, he prefers to be behind the scenes. He would rather work the spotlight, help with the sets, do the other stuff behind the scenes.
Mostly work with the spotlight, because that's what I've been doing for,
Right, because it allows him to be lazy years. And just sit on his butt. He's good at
that. Whoa.
What? Did I say something?
Whoa now. I work hard as a spotlight. Do you know how hard it is to follow Jacob on a stage? Do you know how hard that is to do? I want you to sit behind that machine. I want you to follow your son.
You know what? You know what? When you guys did Elephant's Graveyard.
Oh, brilliant performance.
It was, well, yeah, great performance, but I will also grant you that I paid close attention to the lighting work in that. You actually did really good. I mean, I'm not gonna knock what you do. You put a lot of work into that, and I'm very proud of it. But I'm also glad, because last year for the All School Play, they did, Korkendorfer's Dracula.
Yeah, Korkendorfer's Dracula.
Yeah, and he got to be a drunken sailor.
And Frankenstein.
And he was really good at it. And again, you shine when you're on stage. When
Hair
you choose
armor.
To do it.
Ugh.
So, I'm looking forward to this one personally.
Bye. Crisco in hair, not good idea. Anyone out there, don't ever do it.
Why?
My hair armor when I was Frankenstein?
Yeah.
Coming home?
That was so funny.
No, it wasn't! It hurt!
Can you see your levels when you scream like that? Can you see how that goes off of the charts?
I'm making sure they can understand the pain and torture I went through.
Okay, I'm just saying, you blew their ears out to do it, but they understand now. Okay, we're done. Let's move on. 58. Thank you, Mrs. Darks. Great question. And to answer that question for me, if I were a performer, I would prefer to probably be center stage. I would probably be more like Jacob. But I don't know because I never chose to do it when I was a kid. So maybe that says something about me. Maybe I'm just deluding myself now. We'll see. Number 58 is from Billy Bob again. Billy Bob asks, have you ever been naked in public?
Billy, there's a couple things wrong with that question.
What? Well, no, the only thing wrong with that question is, I can't answer that with my son here.
Now you have to answer.
Anyway.
Well, hey!
25.
I apologize for my loudness.
Oh, I'm just giving you crap. I do that all the time. Number 25 is from Zimney.
Woo!
What's one thing you can't help but collect obsessively? I'll answer first, because mine's easy. Dice. There. I've gone over my dice obsession many times. What about you?
Hats.
Oh, God, you do have, yeah, but you've got some good hats.
I do have good hats. I love fedoras.
Yeah, you're a hipster douchebag.
My Newsie is my absolute favorite.
Your Newsie actually looks good on you. I like your Newsie cap. What other good hats do you have?
I've got my Team Red shirt. Not shirt, hat.
Yeah, Team Red from
TF2.
Team Fortress 2.
I've got Dry Bones, which I wear a lot. I've also got the Hyrulean hat, the Shark hat, and then my black hat that Katie gave me.
And then you also have a band leader's cap.
I do have that.
You have a turtle hat.
I do. I was using my practical hat.
Yeah, a spider hat.
A Darth Vader helm, a biker helmet, the lich mask.
Yes, a Captain America helmet.
Those last six are in my car right now that I use for various purposes.
Right, at drama, at theater.
Yeah.
Usually. Anyway, yeah, he's got a lot of hats. I have a lot of dice. 81.
Oh, and a jester's hat.
Oh, yeah, good jester's hat. 81 is from Yumungus. Thundar versus Luke Skywalker.
Google Thundar for me.
You don't know. He's Thundar, the barbarian, with his friends, Princess Ariel and Ookla the Mock. All right, hold on.
Is this one of them 60s references, Dad?
God damn you. Hold on. Let me pause this for a second while I go show him Thundar. Well, no. What, you know what? Let's keep it live. Let's keep it live so that you guys can hear his reaction. Let's see. Thundar the Barbarian. And Thundar the Barbarian images. Come on, baby. Here we go. Oh, I loved that as a kid. All right, that's
He-Man?
Shut up. No, that's Thundar. Thundar would kick He-Man's ass in a heartbeat.
It's He-Man with a shirt on. And barely even that.
No! No, that is... No! All right. Hold on a second. Just stay out of this, Noah. All right. He-Man is the gay prince of Eternia, okay? Whereas Thundar...
Is the gay prince of barbarians?
No! He is a... Yes, I don't know his sexual orientation. I don't remember if he ever dated in the show. And that's irrelevant, all right? He is a total badass in a post-apocalyptic Earth where the moon has been ripped in half, but, thus throwing the entire world into chaos.
But he looks like a dirty blonde He-Man.
And these are his friends, Princess Ariel and Ookla the Mock.
What's a Mock?
It's a knockoff Wookiee, really. But so look, see, you can even see the broken moon in that picture. Look at that.
Yeah, but he's still He-Man.
No. Alright, you clearly, alright. To put this, to answer your question though, now that we know Thundar the Barbarian versus Luke Skywalker.
Is it because of the laser swords?
Yeah, it really is. That's his fabulous sun sword.
Fabulous sun sword?
Crap, I think it really is the fabulous sun sword. Oh, that would be terrible.
Is he He-Man by the power of Grayskull?
No! It's a, you don't! I will sit you down and make you watch a full episode of this show.
Thundercats, ho! All
right, the answer is, despite my love for Thundar the Barbarian.
The Force overwins barbarians.
Yeah, Luke Skywalker's going to win, because Luke Skywalker's on a hero's journey, Thundar is already a hero, and Luke is Luke's gonna beat everything. That's just the way he's designed. It's what he's for. I wish it was otherwise, but it's not. Sorry. We are watching an episode of this, I swear to God. 93.
I've already seen a lot of Thundercats though, so.
Why do you hate me?
It's not just you.
93 from Ronster. If you had an alignment, what would it be? I already have given my answer, but you go ahead and do yours first.
Chaotic neutral.
Neutral!
Speaking of chaotic neutral, Sam and I are writing a story, and I'll tell you about that later.
Oh, alright. Don't let me forget that then. Alright, he says chaotic neutral. I'd say
neutral.
Neutral. True neutral.
Yeah, you wish. You guys are actually more lawful than you know. I would be lawful good, simply because, more towards the neutral good, but definitely leaning lawful, simply because I think I'm a good person, and I lean more towards law and order, following the rules, that sort of stuff. And so therefore, yeah, lawful good, neutral good, somewhere in that range, pretty sure. 25. This is going to be our last one, I think. We already did 25. Alright, 69.
What? Don't do that.
Do what?
Say bad things about Ronster. You'll hurt his feelings.
Hi, I feel like a Ronster.
Alright, here we go. Number 69 is from Humongous. Humongous says, I have encountered RPG players that don't like using Die 6 systems. What do you think? We covered this one last time.
That's their opinions. Come on.
I'd say they are those people that don't use Die 6 computer things.
No, they're talking about Die 6 systems for role-playing games. So, like, in D&D, we usually use the 20-sided die most of the time.
Yeah.
And that's a Die 20 system. He's talking about systems that use mostly the regular 6-sided dice. Or number cubes, as you call them in school, because they're not allowed to say dice, because that would promote gambling.
Really?
Yeah, that's why they call them number cubes in your Saxon math book.
No, they don't. They call them dice.
Yeah, have you seen his homework?
No.
My homework says...
All elementary school math books in our system say number cubes. They do not say dice.
Really?
Yeah, they don't want to promote gambling.
That is... silly.
That's what I say, but...
I turned to a snake there for a second.
But, if people don't like it, they don't like it. If you're gonna choose to dislike something simply because of the dice, remember that most games, the mechanics are less relevant than who you're playing with and the story you're telling, honestly. Good players can make even the crappiest mechanics work really, really well for you. Not that mechanics are not important, they certainly are, but, yeah, don't discount a game just because you don't like the mechanics. It could be worthwhile. Okay, I lied when I said that was the last one. Now we're at the last
78.
One. 78! Which is from?
Zimny!
Now you have to say hi to Zimny.
Hi, Zimny!
Hi, Zimny!
Zimny's Swedish.
Oh, hey!
Yeah.
I know a lot of Swedish people.
create a mashup of kobolds and a mythology of your choice and dazzle us with your creativity. Okay, I don't know where I'm going to go with this for sure, but I do know that when you say mythology, the first thing I think of, for some reason, is, well, actually, the first thing I think of is classical Greek and Roman mythology and then Norse mythology, because those are the ones I'm most familiar with. But then I think to myself, no, some mythology other than the standard, something that people aren't used to. And so, therefore, I go to X-Files. So
some kind of mythology a hipster would bring up.
All right.
One of those lesser...
I swear.
Non-mainstream mythologies, you know?
First Thundar... You're not welcome. I've been listening to X-Files Files with Kumail Nanjiani, and in X-Files Files, as they go through the episodes one at a time of X-Files, they are talking about there are Monster of the Week episodes, much like Buffy had, and then they're also what they're referring to as mythology episodes. This is standard nomenclature for them. And the mythology episodes are the ones where they get into mostly the aliens and the government conspiracy stuff. Those are their mythology episodes. That's the backbone of X-Files, especially after the first season. And so my job is to do a mashup of kobolds and X-Files mythology. All right, so therefore, is it that the aliens, all of this time we've been thinking that they're... that we're supposed to be watching the skies, and it's actually kobolds, and they're coming from underground? Or are there actually aliens out there, and it's not the government that's covering up, it's the kobolds. The kobolds are protecting the Earth from aliens. Or, alternately, the kobolds are the bad guys, and they're trying to keep us from making true contact with the aliens because, of course, the aliens would then give us the upper hand in the fight against the kobolds, which we didn't even know we were fighting. Something like that. That's where I would go with it. Kobolds plus X-Files. You got anything to add to that? Because I'm out of creativity and he wanted us to dazzle him.
I would say kobolds and aliens against kobolds want to destroy the Earth because kobolds are invading all over the Earth.
I don't know if you guys could hear him, but essentially he wants kobolds to be there to be good guys and bad guys of the kobolds. And so therefore there are kobolds underneath the ground who are wanting to take over the Earth, but then there are other kobolds who are actually wanting to or
no,
have
I
been
said
in contact.
Aliens are wanting to destroy the Earth because of the kobolds.
Oh, I misunderstood.
Because the kobolds are getting stronger underground and they're trying to find a way to get...
All right, so you've got aliens... All right, wait. Let me make sure I got this. So you got aliens coming from the sky, and you've got kobolds coming from underground, and the humans are caught in the middle. And who's the good guys here? Is it just humans are the good guys, or is
humans
there
are trying to stop kobolds from taking over the world, while also trying to stop the aliens from...
So there are no good guys. We're actually trapped between the two. That's not bad. All right, I can go with that. Where I thought he was going is I thought there was going to be good factions of kobolds and bad factions of kobolds, and we would have some of them trying to invade us and some of them trying to help us. Whether they're defending us from aliens or helping us with the alien contact, I don't know. But I was going to go with different factions of kobolds. But I think maybe this using aliens and kobolds as a metaphor for heaven and hell, one from above and one from below, but neither one of them, as it turns out, are actually angels, and they're all out for their own selfish best interest. That's not a bad plan.
What if the aliens are kobolds?
Oh, kobold aliens! That would be a good idea from the Pathfinder world.
Yeah, I'm done with that one. 70 again. Nope. 04. All right, this is really the last one now, I promise.
Dad, don't lie to us again.
04 is from my brother Kyle. And Kyle says... Okay, for real this time, because no one has explained it to me, what does patchouli smell like? I don't know. I have smelled patchouli once, and I remember it not being pleasant, but I also can only think of it in terms of, was it High Fidelity? When he makes his little rant and talks about the patchouli stink. I think Dennis Leary has done a bit about someone who stinks of patchouli, and apparently it smells like, I don't know, hippie dirt farmers and weed. I don't know what patchouli smells like. I've smelled it once and went, oh, that's not what I expected, but it's also not pleasant. But I don't really know. Someone else is going to have to explain it to you, dude. What?
What is it?
Patchouli? All I know is it is some sort of scent, or people use it as some sort of scent. But let's actually look up patchouli.
Look, it's He-Man.
It's He-Man. You're right. Patchouli, essential oil of patchouli. All right. Patchouli is a species of plant from the genus Pogostemon. It is a bushy herb of the mint family. Patchouli or patchouli oil is used as a scent, and I don't really know what it smells like. I wish I could tell you, dude. Sorry.
How can something of the mint family smell so foul?
I don't know. I like I say, I remember smelling it, knowing it was patchouli, and not being thrilled by it, but it was 10 years ago, so I don't even remember what it actually smelled like. Okay, we're done. We're done. We are completely finished with the Podomatic. We are done with this podcast. So, the only thing left is for GLaDOS to come out and sum up this episode for us. Go ahead, GLaDOS.
Remember when the platform was sliding into the fire pit and I said goodbye, and you were like,
no way.
And then I was all, we pretended we were going to murder you.
That was great.
This podcast is copyright 2015 by Nerd Pride Radio. The opening and closing theme is Death Metal Disco by Ian Kronk. My bumper music this week is She Blinded Me With Science, as performed by William Shatner, and Ramblin' Man by Hank Williams. All these songs are available on iTunes. Check them out. Buy them. Enjoy them. I wouldn't put them in my podcast if I didn't love them. If you want to do something nice for this podcast, recommend it to a friend. If you enjoy it, then spread the word and let other people enjoy it. Don't forget to check out the games I have available on my free games page. Instant Game, Animal Ball, Melee, Sandbox Hill, two-thirds of a dozen others, all free, all the time. See how much better that sounds when I actually have the script in front of me?
Yeah.
That was perfect. That's how I wish I had done it.
You read really well.
Thank you.
You have it memorized by now? What is this, like, episode, like, 300 and some?
Oh, jeez. Episode 77. If you want to contact me, you can always email me at mike@nerdprideradio.com, and email me at mike@nerdprideradio.com, and I promise I will actually respond to you, or find me on Twitter, where my Twitter handle is @nerdprideradio. You can even check out my Facebook page at facebook.com/nerdprideradio. I haven't used that thing in months, so it's kind of worthless right now. I'll try and get back to it. But come on, be totally honest. The very best way to talk to me is you come sign up for my forums at nerdprideradio.com/forums. You sign up there, you send me a message, we will hang out together, we'll become best friends in the world. We'll have fun.
I thought I was your best friend.
Not since Thundar, no.
You mean He-Man.
And now welcome to Listener Betrayal. Before every podcast starts, I post out on my forums and ask if anyone has anything to add while I'm recording. And when we get to the end, I put a stop to it, and whatever they've posted, I'm going to read off to you guys. So here we go. Starts off with Stan. Stan says, how's the weather out there? Got any plans for the weekend? All right, two-part question. The weather is very, very nice. We had tons of snow on the ground, but it's all melting now. Me and the little boys went out this morning, and we made a snowman, and we had a great time out in the snow.
Without me.
Without you, because you were at the speech meet. And our snowman is now half-melted and really skinny, and he had his arms upraised in glorious exultation earlier, and now his arms are drooping down at his sides because he's kind of melty. But it was pretty good. Got any plans for the weekend? Not really. We're staying at home. We watched Horns last night, and
oh, Horns is glorious.
What are we going to watch tonight? We're either going to watch Boyhood or Goonies. I don't know which one. And then tomorrow we got some work to catch up on, housework, lesson plans, stuff like that. Nothing big. Talvin says, so we know your thoughts about middle-aged men role-playing teenage characters in a relationship. What if those characters got engaged in the game?
Didn't they?
Well, what's your opinion on that, if they were to do that?
Hey, it's their metaphorical bodies. I'm not one to judge.
There you go. Yeah, you know what? I guess getting engaged makes it a little bit less creepy. So now your pretend fornication at least will be, sanctioned by the,
holy bonds of matrimony.
That's the words I'm looking for. So, yeah, good on you, man. I was about to I was about to run R2 on the Potomatic again. Talvin also says, how much wood would a woodchuck chuck if a woodchuck really could chuck wood? Well, a woodchuck would chuck all the wood in the wood if a woodchuck could chuck wood, obviously.
What about a gopher?
Which is, by the way, 387 board feet. So.
Oh, that's less than I thought.
Talvin then further adds, how do more kids in my daughter's high school finance, how do more kids in my daughter's high school finance class not know about the rule of 72 and the power of compound interest? Do you teach your kids about money, investing, and budgeting? Okay. My son is looking completely confused because he does not know about the rule of 72. It's talking about compound interest that, if you're in general, if you're running at, let's say, 6% interest per year, then your money will double after 72 divided by 6 years, which is 12. So if you have 6% interest, you'll double your money in about 12 years. At 7% interest, you'll double your money in 10 years, etc. So, well, I don't know. Probably because people don't teach them that anymore. I certainly, look, we teach our kids about money. We teach our kids about financing and the importance of knowing how to spend money and how to keep money. But I don't think we've done a spectacular job. I mean, I don't know. Jacob's done all right for himself. He's in college. He's paying.
That's all right.
Well, no, I mean, I don't think we've. Jacob's in college. He's paying for his own schooling. He's doing well for himself.
He steals my leftovers.
Right. He steals your leftovers. That's him being frugal.
No.
That's him saving money.
It's him taking my stuff. That's my food.
That's, yes, your food
it's
that I made and I packaged for you. That's right.
Yeah, slave.
Yeah.
They get me.
And I assume when this one gets a job again, he'll also start learning more about budgeting and saving and all that. Although, you know, from your job last summer, he socked away most of his money from last summer and has kept almost all of it too. So you've still got like
soda here and there, but you know.
Yeah, you've still got a few hundred bucks in the bank. So
a few hundred?
He doesn't even know how much. You haven't even looked at your bank account in ages, have you?
Well, no,
I'm sorry, Talvin. I have not done a very good job.
I haven't bought anything in a while.
He doesn't even know what's in his account. Yeah, you have.
Talvin. I disappointed you.
You've got like 400 bucks, dude.
Really?
I know. Crazy, right?
What? I could be doing stuff.
Yeah, if you weren't grounded all the time, you could.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I'm sad now.
Talvin, I'll... Talvin, yes, that's true. You could spend your $400 to buy us a hot tub. Which, by the way, Noah, $400 would not go very far buying a hot tub. Just so you
know. I mean, get one this big.
Yeah, a little tiny one. All right. Talvin then adds, a comet/asteroid is heading for Earth. Do you try to survive or just enjoy the show and let it end quickly?
Well, I mean, it's a meteor. Nothing's going to go quickly.
Right. No, I would work on surviving. Sorry. We've already got the survival plan. We head out to the in-laws' house. They've got the guns and the food stockpile.
Wait. Asteroid. You're gonna fight off the asteroid with guns?
No, the guns are for fighting off all of the survivors who don't have, a house on a hill with a great stockpile of food and guns. And they would want to come and take our food and guns. So we would have to stop them.
Okay, wait. But he never specifies that there's any survivors. Maybe it's
Of course. Look.
Maybe it's like the old asteroid that killed the dinosaurs and it's going to wipe out all life on Earth.
It didn't wipe out all life on Earth because we're still here.
It was underwater. Now, anyway.
No, what happened was, what will happen is a huge asteroid hits
corner,
the Earth.
Apparently.
Huge asteroid will hit the Earth, kick up stuff, create a nuclear winter, and we wind up having 3 or 4 years of no sunlight. And so, therefore, plants start to die out. Species go into mass extinctions. The food chain is completely disrupted. People die. People starve.
People
will die all over the Earth because there won't be any food. But some people will survive, and eventually the sun will come out, and some of the plants will make a recovery. We will have some people who had actually stockpiles of seed plants, and we will actually have people who are making a concerted effort at regreening the Earth.
Are we going to go pokey-poking about the seed vault?
Yes, let's go pokey poking around the seed vault. So, I know us, and assuming that we weren't in the direct blast of the rock hitting the Earth,
right at your face.
Assuming we weren't in that blast radius, yeah, we would head out for high ground, out to the in-laws in the apocalypse readiness zone, and we would make an effort at survival. I absolutely know.
I think that's what every man calls his in-laws' house.
Oh no, no,
the apocalypse readiness zone.
No, your grandma and grandpa have a nice setup. I am not. Your grandma may be a little bit crazy, but
a little bit.
She has got a set.
She worships Fox News.
She's got a set up out there, dude. I'm not, again.
I mean, pickles to last us forever.
I don't think, yeah, that, see, exactly. You could survive for months.
they'll be gone in a day.
They've got cows, for God's sake.
That'll die in the nuclear winter.
Okay, right. But then we have meat, and she has the facilities to preserve that meat. So
does she have the know-how, though?
It doesn't even have to, yeah, absolutely. She used she used to work at the grocery, and she actually butchered. God, your grandma is trained to butcher ostriches, for God's sake.
Wait, what?
Yeah, they got licensed for butchering ostriches.
So that's, she could, that's new to me.
So she could, yeah, she could do beef and, she can do
ostriches.
Pigs. And chickens are easy. They used to keep chickens and geese and ducks, and she'd kill.
And ostriches, apparently.
She'd kill those and cook them up. No, she did ostriches down at the meat market, but it was never, she's never owned any. So.
But, I didn't know that was legal. You could just chop up and, cook ostriches with the proper licensing?
Yes.
This is new to me.
God, about 15 years ago, 20 years ago, when they thought that they thought ostriches and emus were going to be the new white meat. It was this
really?
Big fad. Oh yeah, yeah. They were had all sorts of people buying into it. They had these salesmen who were selling ostriches and emus to everybody, thinking it was going to be the new white meat, and we were all gonna. We had this plan that it was going to take over, and it was going to be the new big thing. We just need to get enough locals to put it all together, and so they got licensed to do the because someone local had a little farm with like a dozen emus on it.
I would have loved to have like a big old ostrich farm.
Yeah, well,
go out and ride an ostrich every morning.
As it turns out, that plan was dumb. So it never panned out, but she was licensed.
Jaws is dumb. Jaws is dumb. Thundar.
You're a bad person. Hold on. One last thing from Talvin. It says, so, Columbus in Zombieland has a set of rules for surviving the zombie apocalypse. What are your rules? Hooking up with Tallahassee would be considered a valid rule.
Okay, rule one, hook up with Tallahassee.
Tallahassee is Woody Harrelson.
I know.
Okay, just making sure you know.
I am well aware who Tallahassee is. But he is very handy when you're in an amusement park during the zombie apocalypse.
Yes. Yeah, rule one, definitely team up with Woody Harrelson. Holy crap. He was the zombie master. Other than that.
He's also a government-built cock-blocking robot.
Right. we love that movie. The only one that's really, really important in that movie is the double tap.
I cannot tell you
how many movies we watch where you watch somebody go down.
Double tap.
And there will be three of us in the room yelling at the screen. Double tap. Hello. Double. What is wrong with you?
You shot it once. Do it again.
And then sure as crap, they get back
brains.
Up.
Brains. Oh, how could this happen? Because you didn't shoot it twice.
We did it watching the third Hobbit movie when Thorin Oakenshield takes down his spoilers, by the way, in case you didn't know that Thorin was eventually going
under
to defeat
the ice.
York. Yes, and he takes the guy down, and we all are watching it happen, and we're looking at the thing under the ice,
tap.
And we're all going, double tap, now,
and
now!
And eyes open.
Yeah, and does he do it? No, he doesn't listen to us. So that's the most important rule. I suppose I could come up with a whole list of them, but my kids are annoying me. I got to be done with this. So we're at the end. Say goodnight, R2.